Good afternoon, everybody. I hope you aren't disappointed to see it's Leslie Bender today. I'm an attorney with Evershed Sutherland in the nation's capital, where it's well over 100 degrees today, a little toasty. But it's always a little hot here in the nation's capital. I want to welcome you to today's webinar, and we have a bunch of high energy people who we are really excited to have to talk to us about how to convince consumers you are on their side. I love to hear conversations by passionate industry folks about how important it is to approach calls with a beginner's mind, an open mind, and hopefully to receive information. And we're going to hear from these folks today about what is going to be important to think about in order to coach your teams or yourself to improve the quality of your consumer interactions. By their nature, it's often hard for collection calls to be anything other than adversarial, confrontational, or you're dealing with people who are experiencing a lot of shame. They don't know who's calling. They feel embarrassed that they have not been able to meet an obligation. And so it's kind of important to train our folks to understand the consumer's perspective. Consumers can be surprised. Consumers can feel like that someone's out to get them, and they don't see that collectors and consumers want exactly the same thing, to help the consumer solve whatever boulders are in their path that are keeping them from resolving accounts. So in order for collectors to quickly establish that they're not the enemy and they want to work with consumers to achieve the same goal of resolution, these experts are going to tell us today about some tips. We want to thank the generous sponsorship of Peak Revenue Learning, and we're going to hear in a moment from Chris Rickman a little bit about Peak Revenue before we end our time. Peak Revenue Learning's knowledge source can help you take advantage of the spacing and testing effects. These concepts have been proven to be quite effective in learning improvement, knowledge management, and knowledge retention. They also can improve some gamification and add a little fun to the fundamentals of compliance learning. So we're going to get over to Chris in a few minutes, but right now let's introduce and tell you a little bit about today's speakers. First, I'd like to introduce you to Dave, who has over 40 years of leadership experience. He's a results-driven management professional focused on driving growth through cost reduction and revenue increases. He excels at building and leading high-performing teams, is known for his genuineness and his ability to turn around businesses both internally and through his effective consulting. Thanks, Dave. Melanie is the Senior Director of Training and Development for Revco Solutions. She brings nearly 20 years, despite her obvious youth, of experience in the revenue cycle management world. She oversees all training and development initiatives from onboarding to ongoing professional development, fostering a really positive employee culture. Melanie is passionate about empowering people and helping them reach their full potential. Thanks for joining us today, Melanie. And finally, last but never least, we have Jeff, whose career centers on building strong customer relationships across consumer collections, B2B, credit control, and fintech lending. He has a proven track record of leading high-performing teams, managing complex receivables projects, and implementing impactful training programs. Jeff is driven by a passion to align revenue recovery with customer trust, leveraging empathy and strategy for positive outcomes, and like me, is a dog lover. So everyone who is watching today is watching live, and you are all invited to weigh in our chat and also to use our Q&A feature. I'll try to keep an eye on those and give an opportunity for us to have our panel of experts answer your questions and burning issues. Okay. If you are nervous about revealing who you are, if you click the Q&A, you can post any questions anonymously, and we would be happy to handle them. All right, let's get to our discussion topics. Panelists, thank you so much on this heat dome day to join us and to share some of your knowledge and your industry experience. Let's talk about what the most effective opening statements or phrases are you feel folks should use within the first 30 seconds of a collection call in order to immediately shift the customer's mindset from defensive to collaborative. And Melanie, why don't we start with you?
Sure. Thank you. So I would say with every collection call, you nailed it earlier when you were introducing the topic. There's a lot of different consumers we'll speak to on the phone. And I would say a lot of them, what I like to say to newer people that have never done this before is that we are talking to people about the two most personal things in their life, their money and their health, for the most part, healthcare collections. And so when you're talking about those two things with someone, they're automatically going to be a little more defensive, a little more private, feeling like they're under attack a little bit. So right away, we want to put ourselves in their shoes. And I would say as far as phrasing goes, we like to use things like, I want to help you resolve this balance. I want to help see a lot of our agents, that have been especially a little more seasoned. They, hi, it's nice to meet. Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call today. Little things like that, humanizing it, building a partnership right from the beginning, I think is key to how that conversation is going to go. Obviously, depending on how they answer, you can tell their tone, if they're right away, angry or frustrated or annoyed that you called them. You can tweak your response. I think the biggest thing I will tell someone, it's not really about the words you're going to say. It's more so about how you're going to say it. So if we sound robotic, if we sound like this is the 300th call of the day and we just want to go home, you're not going to build that partnership and you're certainly not going to come off in a human way that's going to help.
Wow, that's a great kickoff. Other thoughts, folks?
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head there. I mean, you're going into a conversation, right? So a lot of people like to, do quite a bit of scripting and whatnot, right? Because there's the compliance concerns out there. But what people have to realize is that you're going into a conversation. There's stages to the call. And whenever you're first in that first 30 seconds of a call, you're really getting to know the customer. The customer is getting to know you. And you have to relate to them and really get in the psychological aspects of the call first.
So that raises a really interesting question, Jeff. We want folks to be empathetic and to listen with an open mind, but is it possible to do too much of that in a call opening? Too much?
Yeah, I mean, look, you're not having a full-blown conversation at the opening of the call. You really want to slam through. There's always the key compliance parts that you have to get through first, right, which tend to make people sound robotic and is a tough part to get through. So kind of like what Melanie was saying, we used to call it the voice smile, right, to where you ever have those where they tell you to put a mirror in front of you so that you're not frowning at yourself. But you have audio conversation. They can't see you, but they need to be able to hear that you have, you're not having a bad day. You're here to talk to them, and that's what it's about. So even when you're getting through those monotonous compliance parts of the call, you still need to be having, a voice smile and move through that part. What I always tell people is, like, during that intro, really you want to get through it as quickly as possible. Like, once you identify the debtor, you don't really want to even give them a chance to speak very much until you get through the compliance part and you get to, talking about the bill.
I'd like to just jump in and echo what everybody else here is saying. Just at the end of the day, it's about tone. I'm not sure there's a specific word choice, but, your mother always told you, it's not what you say, it's how you say it, right? So that tone that you start off with, if it's bright and sunny, start there. One of the things that I might tell you to say, just to kick that call off correctly, is just ask simply, hey, how is your day going? How ask something very specific with a happy tone. Let them respond. And if you want this call to go okay, make sure you listened to what they said to you. You don't want to hear, well, I just buried my 2-year-old daughter, and your response be, well, hey, that's nice. Hey, let's talk about the bill, right? We want to actively listen and respond to what we heard.
I love that. Actively listen. So those are some good buzzwords. Dave, tell us, what does that mean practically? You know, let's say we have a new collections representative. They're a little nervous about using the right scripting or talking points. How do we convey what active listening means practically?
So I think we've all heard it, right? You want to listen. You don't want to listen to just to hear yourself talk, right? You want to listen to what they said and respond to that.
Absolutely. That's so true, Dave, is a lot of people, friends of ours even, we probably have people in our lives that we think of, they're not a very good listener, because when they're say something, it's just because they want to top your story or, you know, move on to something about themselves. So love that. One of the things that we do as a part of our training program, we have a section on active listening, and one of the ways we teach it is, I'll give you an example. If I had all of you turn your cameras off, all of us, I should say, turn our cameras off, and I asked Dave to explain to me his favorite hobby. What's your favorite hobby, Dave?
Well, it's either hockey or guitar playing.
Okay, there we go. Hockey or guitar playing. So I asked Dave,
Not both together?
Now that you've mentioned, I actually think I might try that later today.
There you go. So I asked Dave, while all of our cameras are off, I want you to tell us about your favorite hobby or your grandchildren or whatever he's passionate about. And while he's doing that, I would be the person listening, and I would be off mute, and I would be sighing and typing on my keyboard really loud and clearing my throat, acting completely disinterested. He gets a little flustered while he's telling me, because it's hard to talk to someone when that's their response. And I would maybe respond with, oh, cool, and things like that. Well, afterwards, I would say, okay, now let's do it again. And in the second time, I would be very engaged. I would echo back things that he said, wow, that sounds incredible, or you must have a lot of fun. And I'll respond to him. So then I ask him, tell me how you felt in each scenario. And even in that sample, like the person I asked to volunteer, it's amazing how much it impresses upon them the importance of actively listening and responding accordingly versus just being bored and don't care. So hopefully that helps, but that's something we use, and the class really seems to be impacted by it.
I think that's great. Go ahead, Jeff.
You're having a verbal conversation. They can't see you. So here you can, I've been nodding my head the whole time, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you can't hear that, you know?
Exactly.
So you have to have those affirmations in there to let them know that, yes, I hear you. And, you know, as Dave said, that gives you a chance to build rapport with them, you know, having a discussion about what they're telling you. Hopefully it's good things, not like Dave's example there. That's a terrible one to crawl out of.
Yeah, but that's what I meant, right? You can, if you don't actively listen, you can actually make this call worse.
Yeah.
And it goes off on the wrong foot even before you got started.
Explain. Give us an example.
Oh, well, I think I gave you the one. That's the big one.
Give us one. We hear that all the time, don't we? That you ask for the customer, I just buried my husband last week. Well, could you get him to the phone? You know, and I mean, that is a good example.
A good example,
yeah. So I think that's really powerful. And I think sometimes we don't know what we sound like. So what about call calibrations? You know, is that a good way to reinforce, this is what your first 30 seconds of your call sounded like? What do you think about that? Jeff, what are your thoughts?
I tend to, whenever we have call calibrations, I don't plan on them lasting as long as they end up lasting, because I'm very passionate about the subject. So, you know, I mean, it's very easy to stop the call every 10 seconds and say, okay, Did you hear what you said there? Did you hear that tone of your voice? Did you hear what the customer said there? Did you hear the tone of their voice? You know, maybe you could have said this, maybe you could have said that. You know, it's, you have to play that balance between, you know, being overbearing with all of the information that you can throw at the collector and understand that, you know, they're learning, right? Everyone's always learning. I mean, you know, I'm learning every day as well. So it's hard to, but sometimes you have to kind of hold back a little bit of your coaching so that you can make it through the call, right? A calibration really shouldn't last a half an hour, maybe, you know, 10 minutes a call if you can. But yeah, you know, we were mostly discussing the intro there. I mean, there's just so much more that goes on in a call that I could probably spend a week talking about it.
Okay, well, I think Mike would be fine with that if we just went on for a week. Maybe by then the temperatures will drop outside. So let's go back to let's flip and talk about, pick up the thread of calibrations and coaching agents. When you are in an emotionally charged call, we all know it's not all about you, right? And if someone starts the call hot, Dave, then how would you want a collector, you know, who may in this day and age, if they're in their 20s and 30s, they probably text and they think texting is talking on the phone. So how do you train somebody or coach somebody to deal with that? What are some strategies you use?
Yeah, so that's an outstanding question. And every time I'm in that coaching position, right, I tell people they have to find their own way. But then I give them the strategy that's always worked for me in those highly emotional, highly, we'll call them energetic type of debtors. The best thing you can do, or at least this is what worked for me, is just keep your mouth shut, right? Just don't engage. Let them punch themselves out, right? And that's exactly what you're explaining to the newest member of your team. When somebody's angry and they're emotional, they're yelling and screaming, the second you even take a breath, they can hear you even breathe to say something, they're just going to get madder. They're going to get even more angry, and they're going to yell and yell and scream because you're the enemy here, right? You're eventually trying to get them to a place to say, hey, look, this, you're seeing this the wrong way. You're seeing this as me against you, when it's actually you and I against the problem, right? And it's okay to specifically say that. But at the end of the day, what works for me is just being quiet, let them punch themselves out all the way to the point of them stopping and going, hey, are you still there? And the response to that is, sure, I'm still here. Look, I just wanted to listen to hear what the issues are, and this is what I would like to do to help you resolve the issue. That's the strategy that I've always used. It's worked the best for me personally. That's the one that I recommend to anybody else. But at the end, right, it's their bonus check that I want them to find their own way, what they're comfortable with.
I love that. I love the acknowledgement and the reinforcing, I'm here to help. I think that's a great 1-2 punch. We have some terrific stuff in the chat I just want to call out to you. I think that Chris has shared with us a great example. So please take a moment and take a look at what he has posted. Jessica has posted something that's really awesome, and I remember back in the olden days, we always talked about the power of the pause. And Dave has told us, if you ask a question, you better listen to the answer. I think what Jessica is reminding us is, if you ask a question, take a breath. Do not use that as an opportunity to put pumpkin seeds in your mouth, to tippy-tap with your headset too close to your keyboard. Truly pause. What do you guys think about Jessica's advice?
Well, yeah, I think a lot of times we can fill that space with helping the consumer come up with excuses. If we ask a question about paying the balance and then we just keep talking about other options, or if they can't, all we're doing is filling their brain with excuses. If we just leave a powerful question out there and pause, we allow them to have to fill the space because we're not going to do it. And that is huge. I think us as human beings, we don't like silence in a conversation. Most of us are uncomfortable with that and we feel responsible to fill it. I think the power of the pause is you have power when you can sit there in quiet and you can let the person speak back to what you're saying. I did want to go back really quickly to what Dave said. I love that he said, make it your own. He advises them on what works for him, but make it your own. I think authenticity is a huge thing that consumers can hear from us over the phone, whether we're authentic or not. One of the biggest tools that that I like to share with newer people when I'm given the opportunity is if you have, because like you said, Leslie, a lot of times these are brand new people who have never dealt with angry people over the phone before. Some of them are young and they're not used to confrontation. So one of the things that I like to say is, again, like Dave said, listen, don't feel like you need to get your, I call them your feathers all ruffled, because it's not really about you. They're just angry at the situation. They're embarrassed. They're frustrated, whatever. Let them get it out. And then when you have the opportunity, acknowledge, hey, that sounds really discouraging and frustrating. I can understand. So let me do this, Ms. Smith. You've never spoken with me before. Okay, I understand you might be upset with all this that's happened before, but today you got me on the phone. So can you give me a chance to try and help you figure this out? Can you give me that chance? And I will tell you, as using it as an agent, using it as a supervisor, manager, that has never failed me using that. Because what do you say to that? What's a consumer going to say? I mean, you might have the random one that's still angry and tells you off, but 99% of the time, they're going to immediately realize, oh my goodness, maybe this person really wants to help me. So that's just a good technique I put out there as well.
Yeah, and maybe they'll tell you more, right?
Exactly.
Maybe they'll say, you're the sixth person that said you would help and nobody's helped me yet.
Exactly.
Then you can pause and say, tell me about what happened those other times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tell me what information you're trying to get across. But people want to be heard. I want to be heard. And I think that when we are adults talking to adults, we all have a bunch of experiences we brought to that moment of a call. Jeff, you wanted to pop in? Go right ahead.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I've always had built into the talk off is just a spot where it says, shut up and listen. And everybody always giggles at it whenever you get to it. They're like, well, you're telling me to shut up? And I tell them in their calibration too, like, hey, this is your time to shut up and listen. I mean, you know, it really truly is a chess game that you're playing, you know. So in order to play chess, it's not always your move, you know. You have to set them up and let them lead the call and make them feel like they're winning, right? Little did I know until recently, I got on a big business book kick, right? And I don't know if all of you have read the book or listened to the book like I like to do because I hate reading, Never Split the Difference. Very interesting because you never realize that we have the same set of skills that FBI negotiators have, you know, and these are all the same things that they do as well. It's a tale as old as time, right? Yes. Shut up, listen, let them talk. Once they're done talking, that gives you ammo. You know what the situation is now, and you can come back and explain how you're going to help them out of that situation.
And I think back to, you know, Melody's example of turning the screen off. We don't know what our customers' obstacles are until we let them tell us. And Rick put a great bunch of information in the chat. Like when we objectify the customer, they're the debtor, we're the collector, then I think that it makes it even further apart for us to try to learn from the consumer what their obstacles are, right? And Dave, do you have any strategies for that? You know, how do we train people to let the customer speak? How do we train people to see the humanity in every customer we have and to see that we have things in common with them?
Yeah, so I think Jeff actually made a lot of those points, right? And we're kind of right back to what seems to be a focus point here is listening. Just simply listen to what somebody's telling you and try to empathize with those things, right? We've all been, I think that's one of the strategies we want to talk about is we've all kind of been there and trying to make sure that that they understand that we've all kind of been in your shoes. You're not the first person ever to be here. We've all had debt. There's this old story, right? That kind of made me thinking about this where there's this soldier, he's down in a hole, right? I'm sure you guys have all heard this, but he's down in a hole. It's a deep, dark hole. He can't get out of it. So a guy comes along and says, here's a shovel, dig yourself out. Well, all that's happening is he's digging himself deeper. Another guy comes along, hands him a bucket, says, shovel the dirt in there. He just ends up getting deeper and deeper and deeper until somebody comes along, jumps in the hole with him. The guy goes, well, now we're both stuck here down here. And the answer is, well, no, I know the way out. Right. So you want to really, that's how you want to be positioning yourself with any debtor, right? That, hey, you've been here. Let me work with you. Let me get you out of this situation. I'll work with you. We'll hold hands together if we have to. And just kind of come at things that way.
Okay. We have a great question for the panelists from our audience. Any advice for responding to collector complaints that consumers take way too much of their time and negatively impact their statistics for accounts worked when they pause and listen?
I'll take it, but unfortunately it's kind of a pushback on the question itself. I think we spend too much time on that particular KPI, too much time worrying about, oh, well, you have to have X amount of calls. Well, the whole point of, you know, X amount of calls or other KPIs is to get somebody on the phone, talk to them, right, and ultimately bring in a collection. If it takes extra time, well, then it takes extra time. The connection is more important. And I also, you know, I want to frame it this way. Explain to your collectors that at the end of the day, the collection matters, the relationship matters. So you want to basically be positioning yourself as you're fighting everybody else's, your debtor owes their mortgage, they owe their rent, they owe their car payment. So you're fighting to be number one, right? You have to get them to pay your bill first. You're a salesperson, that's what you're selling. But at the end of the day, you need to get them to stop thinking about, I need this company paid first. Build a relationship so that when that debtor wakes up in the morning, they're paying you. They're thinking about you because you've been excellent to them. You've been nice to them. You've helped work with them through every individual situation, so they want to pay you. So I think that we spend way too much time worrying about how many accounts did you work? How long did you stay on the phone? You stay on the phone until the job is done. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that there's the law of averages that goes into effect there, right? I mean, if someone is having an issue and their KPI is low consistently day after day, do they have these same complaint calls every day? I mean, you know, you're not going to get them all the time. They're going to be every once in a while where you're going to have to spend a good amount of time. You know, the average collection call should only last, 3 to 5 minutes? The tops, right?
Mm-hmm. Unless you had to collect a lot of info on the call.
Yeah. I mean, you know, different debt may have different requirements your business knows the average, right? Your supervisor knows the average. And if you're consistently over that average, then maybe you need to have some recalibrations with your manager so that you can understand how you can tighten up your call. You know, mm-hmm. people love to talk, and that goes for collectors as well. So
I totally agree. Yeah, you can't. Basically, what you're saying is we cannot determine success or failure based on random KPIs. You can't just say this KPI means everything all the time. And we can't focus all of our attention on all these KPIs when there's, you know, this to be said about you can't put a price tag on someone's automatic, you know, innate tone that they have, just their personality. There's certain things that this collector could say or do that doesn't even work for this guy over here. Maybe right. this guy is really high in this KPI, but really low in this one. KPIs are a way to indicate possible performance, but they are not a deal breaker and an end all. Like Dave said, some things we need to maybe, you know, finagle a little bit of the weight we put on them, because ultimately, Jeff, you're right. It's about what's the big picture? What is the overall product I'm receiving from this person? And is this a true issue, or is this a random one-off? Is this, you know, a situation that took extra long because of, for whatever reason? So I think, you know, when you focus only on KPIs and you're hammering people just about that, I think you're missing the point.
Yeah, I kind of want to jump in on that, Melanie, too. At the end of the day, I say this all the time, there's only one KPI that matters. At the end of the day, there's one. Of all the ones that we track, how many dollars did you bring into the company today? That's the KPI that matters. All of that, every other KPI is below that. So it's one that matters.
Yep, and I think Rick put it beautifully, and we're going to ask Chris Rickman to pop up and tell us a little bit about peak revenue, but Rick wrote in the chat that he likes to emphasize to people that there is nothing more important than the customer you have on the phone right now. So stop worrying about what Dave says, whether you had too much dwell time, whether you took too long to put notes in the account, whether whatever, you know. The most important thing is for people to be present in the call. And I love that comment. Rick, over to you. Chris, tell us all about peak revenue.
Thank you, Leslie. And hello, everyone. We're really grateful to have the opportunity to sponsor today's webinar. Our company provides Knowledge Source, leading knowledge skills and compliance training application for companies with collection operations. Knowledge Source is used by our clients to simplify and lower the cost of training new and existing employees, whether that's on-site or remote. There's a phenomenon that impacts any company training anyone called the forgetting curve. It describes the rapid, dramatic deterioration of retained knowledge after training events, whether that's new hire or other types of training. In addition to this leading to increased mistakes and complaints, missed revenue and dissatisfaction, this contributes to greater turnover. A problem that many organizations share is considering employee development an expense rather than an investment. This view can have a detrimental impact on morale, motivation, and retention. According to a study by IBM, employees who feel that they are not being developed to help reach their career goals are 12 times more likely to leave their company. Most of the folks we speak to recognize the outdated model of onboarding training followed by annual refresher training is really inferior to a model where spaced repetitive micro-learning really promotes deeper learning. Knowledge Source clients are companies that want to build and maintain a really high level of assurance that staff members have not only mastered but are maintaining their mastery of the knowledge and skills required of them when they're interacting with consumers. In summary, Knowledge Source will increase quality, decrease risk, help grow revenue, lower cost, and help reduce turnover. To find out more about us, please visit us at peakrevenuelearning.com or feel free to give me a call. I'm at 803-521-0031. We're here to help make your job easier and both you and your company more successful. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you, Chris. Any opinions on any of these topics that you've heard us discuss today? I guess not. Okay. We want to pivot and answer a question in the chat. The question, thank you very much, is, as a collector and prior auto adjuster, I was always taught to let them vent. And when customers are done venting, offer them the options and get control by managing the call. Is that something that this panel recommends?
I think that's what we were just discussing, right? Shut up and listen and let them vent. I think there's a statistic out there that someone can only yell for 5 minutes until they gas out.
They haven't met my wife.
Love everything, Dave.
Taking a turn. I don't think I'm allowed to take that. They take this there. I think it has to do with some emotional intelligence, right? Sometimes it's hard to listen to somebody yelling, right? So I think that you have to also train people. If you're going to train them, let them vent. What I heard Melanie say is, it's not all about you. So when they're venting, it is how they feel. Mm-hmm. And that's something worth honoring. Speaking of honoring, how effective do you think storytelling or sharing success stories, you know, for example, some of my other customers have taken advantage of the 3-payment plan over 6 months because it fit their budget. Do you think that's something that would fit your budget? What do you guys think about the idea of storytelling or sharing a success story anonymously, of course, about other customers as a collection call strategy?
It has its place.
Yeah.
You know, for sure. People like to hear other success stories. And I mean, really all you're doing there is you're throwing out options to them, right? And if it's a feel-good story, then it's a feel-good story, and hopefully they'll get along with that, you know, and go down that path.
I think, you know, it depends on the story you're telling, right? Because I think the example you gave, Leslie, is a great example. I think absolutely. I love the phrase, I help people every day in situations much like yours. Can you give me a chance to see what I can do for you? That's great. The example you gave specifically around a specific payment arrangement or something, yes. The thing that I would caution or be careful of, even with the conversation around venting, is sometimes story time on collection calls can end up down a rabbit hole that we have no business being down. We are not therapists. We are not their best friend. And I understand our company culture statement is serving one another so that we can serve the world. We teach that from day one. So we do want them to serve the people that they're speaking with, but we also have a job to do. Like Dave said, at the end of the day, how much money did we bring in, right? So we have to keep all of that kind of in the balance. So to share stories around, you know, your home life to relate to a consumer, to make a little comment like, oh, if somebody mentions, oh, I have my grandson over. Oh, cool. I have a grandson too. Aren't they great? So now let's talk about this and bring the call back around. It's okay to relate, but we don't want to go down a rabbit hole to where we become their confidant or someone that we just don't have any business being in.
And I guess along those lines, if the person seems at risk in some type of way, then that might be a whole different kettle of fish, right? If you hear somebody and they are very down in the dumps, they're maybe having some ideations about harming themselves or other people,
Sure.
That would be a turn or a rabbit hole where you would want the collector to action the call in a different way, right?
Correct, yeah. And your office would have policies around that, I'm assuming, you know, whether it's alert management right away and possibly contact the authorities. You have to take the same thing. Emotional intelligence comes in here as well to know, and critical thinking skills is huge, to know when to do what and what the point of it is. At the end of the day, this is the goal of my call, and we're headed in that direction, and we're going to take all of the information and continue to steer it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, you know, I mean, you should still be guiding the call. And if you start going down story time too far, you've let them take control of the call, and you can't let that happen. You know, you have to steer it back into the direction that you want.
Yeah.
And all venting isn't healthy. I mean, back to Carlos's question, you know, if the person is angry and is berating the collector, at some point that can be unhealthy for the collector too. And we would want to help give some tools to the collector to help get themselves out of that rabbit hole, because that will ruin their day. What are some tools to give them for that?
Great question, because we don't want our collectors to be abused. I mean, that, you know, that we can listen to someone yell and use language we may not prefer, but if it's not directed at in a threatening or manner that's directed at the collector themselves, we just consider that an angry, you know, irate person. If they become abusive, you are blankety blank, or I'm going to da da da, that's a different story. And and again, this would be up to company policies, you know, at each individual place. But our policy on that is, you know, basically 3 times rule. You know, we'd say, hey, you know, Mr. So-and-so, please stop, you know, with this type of language or behavior or whatever, however they're going to word it. And it's basically 3 times we warn them, or I'm going to have to end the call. But then we also have, you know, procedures after that with how to document the call, how to escalate it to a suit. But we do not want our collectors feeling like they just have to sit there and be called every name in the book without having somehow to exit that call.
So there's a balance to
there
strike
is.
Between
yeah.
the pause and the, you know, you sound upset. This is making me a little uncomfortable.
Right.
Can we get back on track?
Right.
You know, 3 times.
And it has to be specific for those abusive times. They can't just use it because someone's yelling or using language. It has to be specifically aimed at them. So.
Yeah, I mean, you always have the option for a supervisor or manager
yep.
as well. You know, and like you said, every company has different policies. I mean, call me a glutton for punishment, but those are probably some of my most fondest memories of being on the phones, having someone cussing me out and turning them around and getting them
yes.
hit.
Yes. That's so true.
And sometimes people just feel empowered if they can escalate to a suit.
Yep.
I want to talk to your manager. Sure, mm-hmm. let me make that happen for you. And then they get on the call with Jeff and they're happy as pie. Dave, pop in. I know you wanted to say something.
Yeah, just obviously I agree with both Melanie and Jeff on that. Simply put, what Jeff is saying, simply a huge majority of the time, a simple second voice can take somebody down, especially like if I'm talking to another man on the phone and he's getting pretty excited, I might actually deliberately look for a woman to take over the call. Right. Maybe a man's not going to be as aggressive to a woman because he feels some sort of type of way about it. And vice versa, right? So always look for the opposite sex to take over the call, but most things will actually kind of de-escalate if you get a second voice. It's just somebody else because, you know what, Leslie called me and I'm really mad at her right now, but Jeff didn't do anything to me because I took out all my aggression on Leslie.
Right.
Right.
That always happens. So let's turn now and let's ask the group a very hard question. What are some things that in your heart of hearts with your emotional intelligence panelists, you know collectors should never say during a call because they are never going to be effective at building rapport? Let's round robin on this and let's start with you, Jeff.
Well, that's a tough one. You know, I mean, I started in the industry back in 2000. So in the early days, there were many things that shouldn't have been said. We're very customer friendly now, you know. But if you're doing the opposite of these things that we're saying, you know, it's going to lead down the wrong path, right? If you're having a bad day when you go into the office and the first person you talk to is, you know, confrontational, and you start going back at them, I mean, that's not going to work out, right? You have to get in the right headspace. So, you know, I don't know a clear answer to that. I mean, the clear answer is obviously we always need to be empathetic. and listen to the customer, whether they're cussing you out or praising you. You know, it doesn't matter. That doesn't change your disposition. So this job is a tough job. You know, it's not easy. And it's not for everyone. You have to have a little bit of a thick skin, you know, and let it roll off your back.
I like your answer, Jeff, that you said it goes back to what we've been talking about, because it's the same thing of what should you say is not as much what you should say versus how you say it. It's the opposite. The same thing goes for what you shouldn't say. And what you shouldn't say are things that would make someone feel a certain way. Like you have to, the same rule applies for both what you should and shouldn't say. It's all about the way you say it. It's more so about the way that you say things that you shouldn't say them. How, there are some compliance things. We all know the things we know and love that we're not supposed to say. You know, we could go down a list, you know, don't threaten legal action, credit reporting, you know, damage, things like that. Those are definitely things that we want to steer away from. But again, the list could be endless on compliance things. I think Jeff nailed it. It's more so important how we don't say things, and saying them the right way to make sure that the message is received in the correct way it was intended.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And it goes to, without going into specifics, right, it's all about intent. If you said something deliberately to get under somebody else's skin, then you shouldn't have said it, right? And those, if you're looking for specifics, I already told you, or, well, that's in your contract, or, well, that's your fault, right? You say things like that. Those are deliberately said to aggravate somebody, and that's what you've done, right? That's all that's going to come out of making those types of comments.
Yeah, and Rick put in the chat, thank you, Rick, you signed a contract, you owe the money, you had the TV that you bought at Best Buy, you know, you went to the hospital, they saved your life, come on, you know, those are probably things. You know, there's not a scoreboard in the conversation with the consumer where you score points and they score points by zinging, you know. I think those are great examples, panel. And, you know, I think that trying to figure out, seeing yourself as that problem solver. Jeff told us early in the call that he stops the calls every 10 seconds and says, did you solve the customer's problem yet? What is the customer's problem? Have you figured that out? Because we're 3 minutes into this call. It seems like you're not figured it out yet. And I love that you just pause the call, you pause the call, and you reflect back something like that. Did I get what you said correctly, Jeff?
Yeah. Now, the one thing that I would add, though, is, you know, yet again, this is kind of how you say, not what you say, right? So you signed a contract. I wouldn't have any problem with someone saying that, but send the right tone in the right context. You know, we are collecting a bill, right? And there are factual things that need to be said during that conversation. And as long as they're said with good intent, like Dave was saying, you know, intent matters. So if you say you signed a contract sarcastically, that's not going to get you anywhere. But if they're saying, you know, I don't understand why I owe this. He said, well, you know, you did sign a contract that says that you were liable to pay this by a certain day, right? That's a whole different story.
Very true.
Agreed.
So what is the panel's advice and what are your thoughts on whether a recap at the end of a call and an appreciation statement are a good idea or a bad idea?
I think a recap's great. I mean, to be able to solidify with the customer of what the results of the call is. And, you know, I mean, even if that's that they're refusing to pay, I mean, it puts it back in their court. You know, like I said before, it's a chess game. You know, it's a game of chess. And this is one call. Sometimes you may only have one call with the customer. And if that's their intent not to pay it, then why are you going to waste your time on talking to them again? But if you've explained, hey, we discussed this, you agree that you owe it, or I've explained why you owe it, and you are refusing to pay this for one reason or the other, then you know, we're going to end the call with that. And if you would like to get this resolved, here's my phone number, you know, or my email. Please reach back out to me. I'm more than happy to help you.
I love that. I think one of the, what comes to mind is a slide that we had on one of our trainings around a strong close. And I had a picture of a nicely wrapped present. I'm sure thinking of Christmas time or birthdays, we all have either the spouse or the child that cannot wrap a present to save their life. And it's paper sticking out, too much tape. It's just a mess. But then there's those people who take pride in their wrapping abilities, and everything has the pristine lines and the ribbons, and everybody would love to receive that second gift, right? And so I look at a close of a call as you are doing your full job and getting everything you can out of that conversation, even to the point where you're wrapping it up nicely so that whoever gets that account next, whether it be someone in the back office to look at something, another collector, cash posted, whoever gets it next, your present is all wrapped up neatly and they can receive that and do what they need to do with it. So I do agree. A recap of the call, when you end and the consumer hangs up the phone and thinks, wait, what, am I still supposed to pay this? Or are they going to do something with this information? What good did you do? So if you get the money, that's the best way to close the call, right? But if you didn't, I think those calls are the most important times to make sure the next steps are clear, who's doing it, and by when, so that we can all have that present wrapped up neatly and everyone walks away with a better feeling about the conversation.
Yeah, I agree with what everybody said here. With one little thing to add, when you wrap up, I did an experiment somewhat unscientifically, but when you wrap up a call and you do it the right way, you will find that your promise to pay kept percentage is actually higher.
Oh yeah.
So if
really?
Ultimately paid, yes, if you're doing it the right way, again, non-scientific, but I definitely found that people that wrap up their calls with specifics have end up having a higher cap percentage. And ultimately, as Melanie and I and Jeff agree, I think that more money in the bank is what we're after.
Yeah, it's all about that final resolution. You know, what did we agree on this call? What is the follow-up?
That's terrific. Well, we are at the final stretch here, and now is the opportunity to give you guys an opportunity to have the last word here. I'm going to round robin and start with Dave this time, and I'm sure there are a lot of topics. I think Jeff said he wanted a week to have this webinar, so since we don't have a week today, I want to give each of our terrific panelists an opportunity to share something we didn't cover or that was really important we did cover that you want to drive the point home. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, I definitely want to dive a little bit deeper into what Jeff started with call collaborations. I think if you want to be successful on this topic as a leader, that's really where it's going to be. When you want to bring your agents in, you want to have them listen to their calls. But as Jeff said, you don't want to be stopping every minute and saying, well, you should have done this, or you should have said this, or hear how that went. Let your agents come to the conclusions that they come to, because once you start telling them what they did wrong, they're collectors, they're going to fight you. Let them come to the conclusion of where they had gone wrong. Let them find it themselves. But do those call collaborations, do them often, and then guide them to where you would have wanted to be. And listen for, you know, it's okay to ask that question. Well, hey, you know, the debtors seem to get a little excited at this point. Their whole demeanor changed at this point. What do you think happened? Those are the types of things that a call collaboration should be. So I just really, I commend Jeff for bringing that up. I just wanted to kind of dig a little deeper into that from my two cents.
Terrific. Jeff, you want to over to you, and we're going to let Melanie have the last word today.
Good deal. Yeah, so I had mentioned earlier, you know, the book that I had read, Never Split the Difference. I can't recommend that enough because it truly does break down every step of the negotiation process exactly as we do as debt collectors. These are things that I've been learning for the past, you know, I learned it, you know, back 25 years ago whenever I started, you know. Roger was a good teacher. So, you know, learning that, learning like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, how the psychology goes into collections makes it a whole lot more interesting than just calling somebody and asking them to pay a bill.
Yeah. So I love that you said I'll have the last word. I will make sure to tell my husband that I was glad to have the last word today. Anyway, no, I go back to the title of today's call, how to convince consumers you are on their side. And I would say as leaders of our collection floors, these people that are actually on the front lines doing the work, what I think is most important when you bring people in and you're trying to tell them how to convince consumers of something, I think it starts with us and convincing our collectors of the same. We have to convince our collectors that we are on their side, that we are for them, that we are serving them so that they can be successful. When they feel that from us as their leaders, when they feel supported and safe and able to grow and make mistakes, but grow from them, and they don't feel hammered down by us, that's going to convince, they're going to be better people who will then serve our consumers better. So I would just say as leaders, that would be my takeaway is don't focus so much on how the agents are treating the consumers. Focus firstly on how you're treating your staff.
I love that. That was a great round robin, and you really brought it home, Melanie. I just want to thank you all. It has been a privilege to be your moderator today. I know I'm not Mike, although I do play him from time to time in this webinar. Thank you especially to Peak Revenue Learning for sponsoring today's webinar. I've put their chat into the chat box for you. Coming tomorrow at 1 p.m. is Debt Buyers and Right to Cure Notices, What You Need to Know. So please tune in again, and thank you for all of the contributions from our active audience that helped make today a success. Thank you, panelists, and thank you, audience. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.